Technorama episode 429, a Romulan, a Klingon, and a priest walk into a bar.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Stupid daylight saving time. I'm late for my meeting. Where is it?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is... Say it, Craig.
Say... Oh, me, Craig Stepp.
You say it, and right? All the knights go, ah, he said the word!
Yeah, that's it.
Someone's awake. Also yes. Joining us here in the Binary Studio, we have...
Keith.
And...
Ben.
Yay, they're
We're
back!
And there was much rejoicing.
Yay.
We do that every week.
I did pick up on that one.
Good. Craig's not behind.
Yeah.
We are soldiering on with the show. Hey, you know, I don't know if you noticed it, but right before he says, welcome to Blockhead Video, the audio took this big dip.
Just vanished.
I got to check that audio clip because that has been running for years.
And I've never heard that before.
That's twice now.
Really?
Maybe tape.
I don't know what.
Maybe the tape is getting old.
The tape wore out.
The tape wore out. Yeah. That's it.
We're going to talk about that later in
the show. I'm expecting it to warble now.
The record's getting warped. Welcome to Technorama. All right. Forward.
Quarter.
Not backward. Upward. Not. Anyway.
Sideways.
Coming up for this episode, we have IT Adventures, Coyotes, and Urination. It should be interesting.
I'm a nation?
Stick around.
Okay, fantastic. You're doing great. Now push. And release. There you go. Okay, one more time.
You've got to be kidding.
No. Yeah, this one more time. And push. And there you go. Mrs. Johnson, congratulations. You have a happy, healthy inner geek.
Aw, man.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong, Ensign Harry Kim from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Not anymore, you're not.
It's all over.
Sorry, Groucho. I'm just channeling Groucho.
Oh, yeah. Again.
There was something in there. We don't have any listener feedback this week. Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do.
I'm looking right at it.
Okay. I was looking further
looking
down.
Looking at the audio feedback.
Then let's play the music. Go for it, marching band.
Letters.
We got letters.
Singing time.
Letters every day.
Latency.
Mailman, today. Reach right in and pull one out.
Ouch!
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy! Have fun here. We asked last week, what was your first computer memory? And we're not saying crucial.com, okay? So just stay away from that.
Kensington.
Mad Marv writes to us. He says, my first memory of using a computer was in first or second grade, and it was an Apple II or maybe a 2C. The class got to use the computer for a whole week or so before it got rotated to the next class of kids. But there's classes of kids. There's the really smart kids, then there's the
Not quite so smart kids.
There's the jocks, and then there's the nerds.
He said, I got to play with a drawing program called Turtle, and I got in the hang of the program and made the best picture out of the class, according to my teacher. Yes, it's a lovely fractal.
Yes, it resembles a turtle. Very much so.
Meta, a turtle turtle.
Mm. Yeah.
We also, well, let's ask these gentlemen, do you have an early computer memory?
Yes, yes. When I was in high school, that's when I got introduced to computer. I mean, because I'm 53 years old, so it was a Nova mainframe system.
Wow.
Yeah. And we all had just individual terminals, you know, with these keys you have to punch like so in order to type anything.
Hard copy terminals, paper stuff?
Yeah.
All right.
That's what we use with. And of course, anytime you were storing your data, it was on a tape, paper tape. That was about that wide, and it could be a mile long, depending on the complexity of your program.
Oh, so of course, had paper tape. Wow, yeah. Better than punch cards.
Yeah. So of course, the big trick was we would always come up with a mathematical formula that we would then run into the system, and it would cause the Nova to go down for like a week.
He's hacking the mainframe at an early age.
Yeah.
Nice.
My first experience was actually with a Trash 80. So, but. An interesting thing is I had one of the very first email accounts ever.
Really?
I had an MCI mail account. I worked for MCI at the time.
What year was that?
Oh.
82, 81.
That's pretty early.
That's back when dinosaurs were roaming the earth.
It probably wasn't even an at kind of address. It was a bang path thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, I haven't seen that in ages.
You could only mail somebody that had an MCI mail account.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd go every day and I'd go to the terminal we had in the office and see if I had any MCI mail. No. Okay.
Someone fire up the UUCP job so I can get mail.
Yeah. Exactly.
I know that was so funny because anytime I had mail, it didn't matter what it was. I've got mail, you know, and now it's like, oh my God, I've got more mail than I. It's all junk.
Stop with the mail.
That's what everybody would yell out. That's where AOL got the idea.
Yeah. You got mail.
You do this happy dance. Like, somebody loves me.
I love my email. Not anymore.
Then you grow up.
Yeah. What's this penis enhancer?
What?
Spam. Oh, yeah, spam. Wait,
where'd you get that?
Hi,
it was
honey.
Spam mail.
Hi, honey. This is Emily.
You get all excited. You do the happy dance. I got email, and that's what it is.
Actually, it's like, hi, Ben. I'm Natalia from Russia. I was like, yeah, I'm into Russian babes. Sure.
Could be.
Not likely.
We also have a listener feedback. Our question 2 weeks ago was, what would you do if you got your hands on one of the new Raspberry Pi 2s? You know, the little controllers with the CPU and the memory, because they just came out with a faster version.
Well, it's not just a controller, it's a mini computer.
Yes, it is. And I think we confirmed this, that Windows 10 is coming free with
a version of
Windows 10 with the Raspberry Pi 2. So,
a very stripped down version, I would think.
I did some reading. If you go look at the website, they describe it as it's a stripped down version. I mean, I have a feeling it's more like a command line version of Windows 10.
It is a DOS prompt.
Yeah, DOS. Yeah. I was going to say back to DOS.
Yeah.
And an old version of Microsoft C6.1.
Well, that's like when we were talking about how, you know, someone tried to, you know, hack like a smartwatch, you know, and put Windows on it.
Why?
Yes. It's the same kind of thing.
You can.
Do it because you can.
Listener Ben,
look, I got Windows workgroups in my Pebble.
All right, back to our listeners, Craig. Listener Ben Vaughn writes, and he goes, hey, guys, I got my hands on two Raspberry Pi 2 boards. Ooh, I ordered them the day after they were announced, and they got to me about 3 weeks later. I'm quite impressed with these little boards.
By the way, I can just imagine this project with two of them. He just sets them on a local network, and they just ping each other.
No, he goes a little further than that. He says, I'm quite impressed with these little boards. I have them running Raspbian, which is an ARM port of Debian. If you logged into one, you wouldn't know the difference between Raspberry and any other Debian-based systems unless you ran uname-a and saw the unfamiliar architecture, and he lists the output of his uname-a here, just to be uber geeky, which I think is lovely. I am using them as full Linux systems, hosting DNS service, both caching and authoritative, and some experimental web server stuff. I'm also using one as a simple file server, hosting as a head to my NAS for my other systems to run backups to via SCP. He's speaking my language, and I'm keeping up. My goal is to use one of them to provide some home automation type stuff. That's what I wanted to do, such as basement water detection. Your basement is flooded. I mean, and you reparse that into, you have an indoor swimming pool.
Thanks, Jarvis.
Temperature monitoring.
It's hotter than hell.
Your house is on fire. Furnace and AC control. Now it's hotter than hell.
Volcano heat.
And I also want to use one to automate my home brewing of fine ales. Best application I've heard yet.
Yes.
So keep up.
Hey, wait, you know what would be cool? You know what would be cool? Yeah. If you use one of those and had some temperature sensors on like your carboys when you put your wort in to let it ferment.
Yeah.
You had like a temperature sensor right on the side of the bucket or something.
So or you some could, sort of electric hygrometer so you can check the alcohol level as it's,
you know.
Yeah.
Hey.
Huh? When it's ready, it's ready.
Yeah.
You could do ding. That with wine too.
All yes. Right. Have it make a little ding sound. You know, ding. Ready.
Ready.
It sends you an SMS when it's ready to drink.
You've got beer.
Keep up the great work, guys. It's always fun listening to you.
You've got beer.
Keith brought along his soundboard. We're all in trouble now.
Oh, no.
No.
History time. What happened once upon a time? On this day in history for March 11, 2015. This is the 70th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 295 days remaining in 2015. It was on this date in 1702 that the Daily Courant, I hope I'm saying that right, England's first national daily newspaper, is published for the very first time. Craig?
That same date in 1916, the USS Nevada BB-36 is commissioned as the first U.S. Navy Super Dreadnought.
Super Dreadnought. Super. Was that from Wile E. Coyote or something?
Yeah.
Super genius. Super genius. Yes. Ben, would you be so kind?
And on March 11th, 1999, that's when we lost the moon, isn't it? Infosys became the first Indian company listed on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. And we said goodbye to the moon.
The moon.
Happy birthday goes on this date to several mathematicians. This is fun. I had fun putting this together yesterday. Several mathematicians, including three French. Urbain Le Verrier, born in 1811. Joseph-Louis-François Bertrand, born 11 years later. And Louis Bacalier, born in 1870. And American Frank Harari, born in 1929.
21.
Keith, 1921. Thank you.
Today is also the birthday of two computer scientists. J.C.R. Licklider?
Yep.
Okay. In 1915, and Ian Horrocks turns 57 today.
Ben!
Keeping with themes of multiplies, two directors, Davis Horsley, who co-founded Universal Studios, was born in 1873, and Jerry Zucker, who brought us such classics as the Kentucky Fried Movie, Airplane, and Top Secret, and the Naked Gun series, he is 65.
Also
turning. Wait, it's my turn, Chuck.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And turning six. I'm gonna fight you when I get out there, Zona. Also turning 65 today is 10-time Grammy winner Bobby McFerrin, the "Don't Worry, Be Happy" guy.
Now that he's 65, I wonder if he is worried.
He's not too happy.
Social Security check don't show. You might have to. Don't worry, be happy. And finally, the nerdiest birthday. Thanks for saving it for me for last. On the nerdiest one on the list, Douglas Adams, who would have been 63 today.
Thanks for all the fish.
Thanks for all the fish. It's the ground coming up to meet me.
I wondered if he'd be my friend.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for March 11, 2015. Oh, and a couple of postscripts. Today is Johnny Appleseed Day in the United States. And if you forgot, Saturday, March 14th is Pie Day.
At 1:15 in the afternoon, or 1:15 in the morning, actually.
Oh, that's horrible.
No,
we can't get any more precise.
1415 2014.
Well, that's right. So it's nine, like one, so it's almost 2 in the morning. At almost 2 in the morning.
No. It's 3:03. 1-4 is the date.
Oh, that's right. The 50 is the year. That's right.
9-5-7. So it's 9:57.
6-5-9-2. But that's as far as I go. Okay.
Weren't you having a pie party or something?
Yes, we're trying as soon as we figure out what time to have the party.
Is it 2 in the morning or is it 9 in the afternoon? Just go for the 3:14 in the afternoon.
Ding dong. Go. Who's at the door? It's 2 a.m.
Pies!
Smack!
Bad right news, everyone.
All right, bad news is that scientists have come out with a hydrophobic paint. Now, we all know that hydrophobic surfaces repel water, which is very handy when you want to make like a waterproof jacket or something. Well, every city should use hydrophobic paint that shames public urinators.
Hey.
This ought to be just fun to watch.
If you've ever lived in a bar neighborhood, you know the smell, the stench of idiots being all over the walls, doors, and sidewalks in your street. Until now, there really hasn't been a solution. The proactive residents, the party district of Hamburg, took matters into their own hands by painting the walls of their neighborhood with hydrophobic paint, which repels water chemically. The same stuff we've tested here at, well, I'm borrowing this from Gizmodo, so they must have tested it on everything from t-shirts to toilet paper.
Oh, dear.
Toilet paper?
Wouldn't you want that to be a little bit absorbent?
This toilet paper is not effective.
When the water or pee strikes the bricks or concrete at velocity, the coating repels it right back from whence it came.
One of the laws of thermodynamics.
Equal or opposite reaction?
Yeah, something like that. That's what I was thinking of.
In most cases, onto the shoes and paints of the offending urinator or pants.
Yeah, supposed to be pants, I think. Yeah. I think that's a typo.
They call it shoes. They call it pee back. I think this is a wonderful solution for a social problem.
Pee back's hell, isn't it?
Sounds like a medical condition.
Oh, yeah. Doc, I got pee back. Yeah. Well, good. Well, how long has it been missing?
Hey, did you watch the video? Did you watch the video, by the way?
I've watched one animated GIF, and I saw one rather colorfully decorated picture of what happened.
Yeah, that's a video. And in the video, not the GIF, but the bottom part, there's a video. And it's talking about why they were doing it, you know, just like the article.
Yeah.
And they show them painting it, and they showed some people coming there later on to pee on it. They're like backing off. The guy's wiping off his pants because it apparently sprayed over his shoes and the bottom of his pants. It's kind of funny.
Hey, you know where they need that? I was just watching the third season of House of Cards. Have you seen House of Cards?
We
okay. Well, the scene opens up on the first episode of the third season, and Frank, he's on his dad's gravestone.
Oh right, that's right.
They should have put it on his dad's headstone.
There we go.
I was trying to figure out where was some public urination in that, and I see now. Actually, we did finish House of Cards season 3.
Already?
So did my mother.
It's
she
been
hated
out for
it.
Like a week. Really?
Oh, yeah. Frank is now Emperor of the Earth.
Emperor.
Yeah.
Oh, is he really?
Bow down to me.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go on. Yes.
By the way, since we're talking about it, I enjoyed it. I think it wasn't as gripping, I think, as the first two seasons.
Okay.
Only because, the first two seasons, he's got a goal. He's working up to be president. Right. Now he's president. It's like, where do you go from here?
Well, now he needs to be elected president.
Like you said, Emperor of the Earth.
Yeah, Emperor.
He's got a Napoleon
complex. Let's conquer Mars. Yeah. I mean, it was good. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it.
All right. If listeners have any thoughts about that.
Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT.
I was just talking to my sister last week. I should have her redo that. Anyway, yes, listener birthday calendar for February. No, it's March now, isn't it? Someone busting in the door?
All month long.
I think it's one of your cats.
It's March.
Okay. Cats one in the studio. Ain't going to happen. March 11th, we have two birthdays. Andy Helsby of Absoblog and Lootly. March 11th is also Ken Kitzman, a.k.a. Kitz Ken. Very creative. March 13th, Friday the 13th, Johanna Gonzalez, a.k.a. Mighty Joe. We already mentioned that the 14th is Pi Day, so that's not even a birthday, but people like to get creative with our wiki, apparently. March 16th, Michelle Lopez, Country Signs. We have not seen or heard from her in many a moon. It's time.
I know. Well, I see her on the social media.
Yeah, here. That's true. And Gregory Lemon from GregoryLemon.com is on the 18th. Happy birthday to all of you. If it happens to be your birthday and we weren't on the list this time around, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. Put it on there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. But happy birthday to you anyway, because you're special to us in that special Technorama way.
And we're special. I'm using air quotes if you can't see me.
Okay. I have a couple audio clips that are out of order, so now they're fixed. We can move on. We're going to take a quick break. Coming back with more interesting stuff than just public urination, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully.
That will entertain and enlighten and maybe inform. So watch out. We're coming right back.
Mr. Turtle, how many keystrokes does it take to get to the ring zero center of an operating system pipe?
I never found out without baiting. Ask Mr. Owl.
Mr. Owl, how many keystrokes does it take to get to the ring zero center of an operating system pipe?
Let's find out. 1, 2, 3, 3.
How many licks does it take to get to the ring zero center of an operating system pop? The world may never know.
What was the iPod, the tiny little iPod called?
The Nano? Ico? The Femto?
Groucho? Harpo? Chico?
I think it was called the Gummo. Nano. Micro. The digital Marx Brothers, you know, Marx Brothers 2.0.
I'll have to go buy some more commands.
I imagine that I'm out of work.
Just leave him to twist slowly in the wind.
I knew if I invited you guys for something, you laugh.
Ah, that seems like just yesterday, but it was a really, really long time ago that was made.
It was all just yesterday.
Everything's yesterday on the internet. You can find it just like
yesterday
that.
Seems so far. Oh, that's not the Beatles song.
We're not singing on this show again. Didn't we put a law against that? We're going to have to take that up at the next board meeting.
Yeah. You're going to dock my pay?
That's
what are you going to do?
B-O-R-E-D meeting. Don't get me wrong.
I dare you to fire me.
All right, tell me what you found here, Craig, about the data center of doom.
Yeah, the data center of doom. Apparently, this is from Palo Alto Networks, and it's actually a book, like the Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Okay.
But it's IT related. And if you actually go to the link I provided, it took me a while to find this. If you go to the link I provided.
Yes.
And you click on the download now, it'll take you to a, it looks like a desk. And on the desk is various items. And but there's a PDF of the book you can download. So it's actually a real thing. The Choose Your Own Adventure, a data center of doom. <That's>, I love the art on the front of the book.
It looks like a guy sitting in a data center at a desk full of spiders. Yeah. He looks like Duke Nukem sitting at this desk. He's not a happy looking guy.
It's Duke Nukem.
The racks and racks of servers behind him have, what is that, more spiders?
And a snake.
And this concerned looking woman over his shoulder and a big snake about to bite his head off. Mm. Yeah, that's lovely. Because that's how my data center looked. Yeah. Not really.
Yeah. Well, I started to read it. I haven't finished it at all, but it's like on, what, page 5? There's a decision point. If you decide to call your friend Teresa, turn to page 6. If you decide to walk over to R&D and check out who's online, turn to page 10.
What?
Yeah, you actually go through the story. And I, like I said, I haven't read far enough in it to tell you more about it.
I would have thought it'd be more geeky than that. If you decided to add an A record to your DNS table.
Yeah, you speed dial your friend BizDev. Yeah, you need to watch, you need to download it and check it out. It's only like 100 pages. But yeah, it looks like a lot of fun, at least to read. But it's promotional, in a sense, for Palo Alto Networks. But it's pretty cool.
Okay.
Hey, I couldn't resist IT, you know, Choose Your Own Adventure book as IT related. I had to check it out.
Go for it, man. All right, we're moving on.
Fine.
With or without you.
Thanks for the witty banter, guys.
This is where Ben and Keith start to really shine. Ben, okay. Would you care to read?
This tweet from the film director, Amos Posner, blew up across a social media yesterday. It's a photo taken of What's Up, Doc? The animation of Chuck Jones. The animation art, excuse me. It's an exhibit at the Museum of the Moving Image in New York.
I won't make you read those under there, but he's come up with some rules. Apparently there were hard and fast rules when he came up with the characters of Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Hmm. Do you know there's a Chuck Jones Museum in Las Vegas?
Yes. There is.
Oh, yes. We're going there. We're totally
Craig, you
going
seem
there.
To think we're going to have time in Vegas.
Well,
we are not.
Actually, we'll talk about this later, but yes, I'm working this out.
So well, anyway, the Roadrunner cannot harm the coyote except by going meep meep.
Okay.
And no outside force can harm the coyote. Only his own ineptitude or the failure of Acme products, trains and trucks were the exception from time to time.
A coyote could stop any time if he were not a fanatic.
Hmm. No dialogue ever except meep meep and yowling in pain.
Oh, but there
that's
is
not a... true. When the coyote face Bugs Bunny, we actually get him to speak. Yep. And that's when we realize that he's super genius. Oh,
there was another one where the kids were sitting in front of the TV and he said, you know, why does he keep chasing him? And then he stops and explains, you know, that roadrunners to coyotes are like caviar to humans. So, yeah, there were exceptions to that one.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Who's taking rule number five?
I will.
Okay.
The roadrunner must stay on the road. Otherwise, logically, he would not be called a roadrunner.
Makes sense.
Hmm.
For no other reason than he's a roadrunner.
Yeah.
Dirt runner.
Next.
Well, all action must be confined to the natural environment of the two characters, the Southwest American desert.
Which is around here.
Right here.
To be specific, Monument Valley.
Yeah, it's all Monument Valley.
I thought they were at the Vasquez Rocks. Isn't that where they did Star Trek?
No.
All tools, weapons, and mechanical conveniences must be obtained from the Acme Corporation.
Kickbacks.
Mm-hmm. Sponsorships.
Whenever possible. Make gravity the coyote's greatest enemy.
Hmm. The coyote is always more humiliated than harmed by his own failures.
That's pretty true.
Well, that's why he needs therapy.
Especially the after a crash, the devices that don't completely go dead, and they're like, bzz, bam, bzz, bam. They just keep getting after him. The audience's sympathy must remain with the coyote.
Hmm.
What? Never sympathized with him. I always laughed at him.
Those two little kids did. Sometimes I feel sorry for the coyote. I wish he would catch that roadrunner.
Somebody needs to teach those kids some life lessons. Yeah. Get them.
And last but not least, the coyote is not allowed to catch or eat the roadrunner.
Never mind the fact that roadrunners can actually, they don't run that fast.
No, they
don't. Coyote could actually beat a roadrunner in a race.
Hey, don't be getting all scientific and ruining my childhood.
Hey, the coyote doesn't have thumbs, but he's able to hold hungry.
George Lucas took care of that.
Yeah.
Hey, the coyote doesn't have opposable thumbs, but he can sure hold some cutlery.
The coyote stands on two legs.
Yes. Stop! 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 You're hurting my brain. Let's go to the next story. In 1923, daylight saving time was actually illegal in some states.
Like Arizona. Woo!
Oh my gosh, I forgot to set my clock back.
Hey,
I threw mine out the window just to see time fly.
Hey. Ah! Hey, bum, bum, bum.
Where's the rim shot when you need it?
I added it was just a little down on the volume. All right, who's taking the read?
Wait a minute. Is it actually illegal in Arizona?
Stop. But what was that?
Is it actually illegal in Arizona or just not observed?
It's just not observed.
We don't pay attention to your silly laws.
Yeah, like it just you got means bragging rights. Just move there, Chuck.
It just means that I have to work at 6 o'clock in the morning instead.
And then we have to change this whole show's format and time to 7:30, 6:30, depending on Craig's majestic schedule.
Yep. That's right.
All because he observes daylight savings time.
Yeah, right.
That's why I always
it's
say,
your fault, Craig.
No meetings before 9 Eastern.
Americans in most states, but not all, will spring forward their clocks last weekend, if you're listening to this in a timely fashion. Most people know that as daylight saving time, caught on as part of energy-saving efforts during World War I. But did you know clock changing actually became illegal in some places once the war concluded? In a fascinating look back into its archives, Time, as in the magazine, not what we're changing our clocks for, unearthed this 1923 story about the bitter battle over daylight saving time. I was caught up in a Dr. Seuss moment there for a second.
Bitter battle, bitter battle.
Who knew mismatched schedules? Who knew such schedules could be cause such fury? All right, here's the quote. A bill is before the legislature to make public display of a clock showing any time save Eastern Standard punishable by $100 or 10 days in prison.
Good Lord.
If you forget to switch the clock, you're done.
A little harsh, don't you think?
Department of the State and all institutions receiving state aid would be prohibited from altering their schedules to conform, in effect, to daylight saving time. This is another step in the fight of Connecticut farmers against the city dwellers to prevent daylight saving. A year ago, having a majority in the legislature, the farmers passed a bill against daylight saving, but provided no penalties for failure to comply with the law. The mayors of several cities forthwith issued proclamations recommending the townspeople to advance their clocks. The legislature angrily protested and threatened to suspend the charter of Hartford, the state capital. On the day agreed upon for putting daylight saving into effect, the merchants turned their clocks ahead. At noon, the whistles blew an hour early, and the clerks walked out of the legislature, leaving the farmer members unable to continue business, angrily sputtering in their chairs. Later, a member from a city constituency offered a bill to provide four commissioners at salaries of $10,000 a year to go about the street, examine the watches of citizens, and take those to jail who use daylight saving time.
Good Lord. Wow. No, I was just thinking, that's a great salary. 10 grand.
In 1923, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that's pretty pricey.
Check pocket watches. What time you got? Oh, busted.
Morning, constable. Show me your watch.
What?
All right, we have a video here, but I'm not going to show it to you. It's a short video of 94 years of robots in movies in just 148 seconds.
I thought
seconds.
You were still talking about the clocks. I was like, we're going to watch a clock go for 24 hours.
That would be highly dull, which would work with this show, I guess. The video that Craig found is from motherboard.vice.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds nice.
it's kind of like that video you were showing us of the pinballs and the videos, and they were going by so fast you had to kind of guess what they were and go, I know that. What was that name of that one? This one shows some robots, and they are going by very fast. The titles are all on there of every movie.
Oh, wow.
But the first
I had to rewind and look at a couple of them.
You freeze frame it.
Yeah, you have to freeze frame this one because some of them are up there for a fraction of a second, just the title. And by the time you read the title, the image of the robot is gone. Mm. Yeah, some are very obvious, like C-3PO. And they're going chronologically, too, which is very fascinating. They have a lot that I recognized from Mystery Science Theater. The walking water heater.
Oh, yeah.
Ro-Man from the Robot Monster. Very interesting. So let's go to Media Corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
All right. Keith, would you read on from what I'm highlighting? Let me unhighlight it.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. They're back. Ooh. Like you've never seen them before.
Ooh.
Producer Adi Shankar and director Joseph Kahn have brought the world.
Kahn!
Adi Shankar presents a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers bootleg film by Joseph Kahn. Kahn? Oh, yeah. You already did that. Sorry. The film, which is unaffiliated with any official Power Rangers franchise, tracks down the Power Rangers teens when they're all grown up. And let's just say they didn't exactly reach adulthood unscathed. If you've ever wanted to see James Vanderbeek, there we go.
I'm not really.
reading through the court again here. And Katie Sackhoff star in a really dark version of your favorite childhood show. Congratulations. This is your special day.
However,
now you have to read the update up here.
The update. The Power Rangers fan film has been pulled from YouTube after a copyright challenge by Saban Brands, who owns the Power Rangers franchise. A more graphic version of the video was at first posted to Vimeo as well, but taken down almost immediately due to copyright complaints. According to Deadline, producer Adi Shankar plans to fight the decision. Shankar opened up about his reaction to Saban's actions in an interview with HuffPost Live on Thursday.
And I watched some of this video, and his story is interesting, and it sounds like a great storyline. I'd love to see this thing. However, it digs into the whole copyright, what's mine, what's your intellectual property, how do you expand it? Thoughts, gentlemen?
I haven't had a chance to see this thing. I really would have enjoyed it. Part of the I would put this on the same level as like some of the Star Trek stuff that's being made, of, you know, like web TV series. I mean, as long as they're not making any kind of profit on it.
Yeah, I think that was
okay. Now if he's making money off of it, and now I can see where there's a problem there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But if he just wants to get it out, just to try and generate some kind of fan buzz, just put it there. Don't try to make any money out of it and see what kind of response you get. It was getting a lot of heat. I know that a lot of people are talking about it. It was very divisive. A lot of people on Twitter were either in love with it or just really hated it. But that's really what you want. You want people to talk about it. And if it will spur any kind of decision for a truly professional studio version to be made for commercial release, then all the better.
From some of the footage I saw, it looked truly professional. I mean, it was brilliant.
I thought it looked good.
Yeah, it looked
really
good.
Well, the fact
really
that he got James Vanderbeek and Katie Sackhoff to do it kind of says a lot.
Yep.
That you guys were able to get, I mean, two professional actors to... Two big actors to come out. I mean, James Vanderbeek, I mean, we just saw him in, you know, he's in a new TV series right now. And Katie Sackhoff, wow, everybody knows her.
Yeah.
So to get
them.
Did
you see the pink Power Ranger pulling off her helmet? Things didn't go so well at the last fight.
No, I would like to see her pull the helmet off with the cigarette in her mouth.
Yeah, there you go. That would be impressive. I have no skin in the game as far as Power Rangers go, because you know, I was older by the time it started to come around in the United States.
Me too.
But I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this. And I watched it and I was like, actually, it looked interesting enough for me to watch the whole thing. So I would love to. I'm along the same thing. If he didn't have any rights, if he's not making money, go for it. But if he doesn't have any rights and he's trying to make money from it, that is an issue.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with it being dark. In fact, I'm actually a big fan of the Ranger series as they originally aired in Japan. And there's one that I have the complete series of, and they usually just run for one full year, and then they create a brand new series, and they just do that year after year after year. And I got one from it was called Go Sentai Die Ranger, and it's intensely dark at times, and it's absolutely fantastic, really really amazing. So I think if someone really wanted to make a very dark version of Power Rangers, I say do it.
Oh, absolutely. I like the idea of taking it to a new place. Like that, be it dark.
You know, and consider a lot of the fans that grew up who were watching Power Rangers when they were kids.
Yeah.
You know, now you're going to be making this movie for them.
Yeah.
As adults now. You know, now they're ready for something that, I hate to use the word gritty, but gritty.
The 20-something, 30-somethings.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, use it. Use it.
Gritty.
More edgy. What does that mean, more edgy?
More edgy. It slices and dices.
But when it comes to, I had a very... shall we say, heated discussion one time with a coworker of mine about copyright infringement and intellectual property. And he was all about, stealing songs shouldn't be wrong. I said, have you ever, put your heart and soul and time and money into something and then have somebody rip it off?
Pirating?
Yeah. We're getting to that. We're getting to that.
Hey, but leaves should be free, but music doesn't just fall out of the sky.
No, I mean, somebody's got to... I came at him, I said, look, I've authored a couple of books. I don't appreciate it when somebody just puts it on the black market and it's available for free. It's not my lifeblood, but I feel a sense of ownership to that, and somebody needs to get paid. Otherwise, it's going to dry up and go away. Somebody's got to get reimbursed for
that. Well, also, the artist, whoever it is, I mean, it's going to kind of... In terms of making any kind of living, it's going to just suck the reason right out of them to want to continue making that product.
Yep.
I mean, initially, yes, they're doing it out of the love for music. I mean, take a major artist or a band, like Metallica. I mean, they did it initially to make music because they really enjoyed it. But if you're going to be doing it full time, you need to make some kind of money back.
Exactly.
And if it's being stolen all over the place, then their salaries dry up. They can't make more music. There you go.
What's their incentive at that point?
Exactly.
Yeah. Except for Game of Thrones. The most pirated show on the planet.
That's, I guarantee you. And we're all eagerly awaiting the next season.
Well, I do think in some ways, pirating has helped some projects, movies.
It did a great job with Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the producers actually loved it. And in fact, because they found that the pirating of the illegal downloading of that series actually boosted DVD and Blu-ray sales.
Really?
Right. Yes, it did.
That makes sense.
Yeah, well, because then you want a real copy of it.
You want a real copy with it, all the bonus material.
Yeah, the bonus material. That's
more
it.
More boobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blooper reel.
Director's commentary on the boob scenes. Blooper reel. Director commentary on the boob scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Let's move on to something a little more entertaining. This is now, what, the 50th anniversary of the Power Rangers? Not Power Rangers. Power Rangers. The Thunderbirds.
Yeah, Thunderbirds. Go Thunderbirds.
Yes, those creepy marionettes that we all love. It's the official anniversary of the Thunderbirds, that beloved TV series from the 60s, featuring a family of mildly creepy marionettes as they save the world. The new series starring equally creepy CGI characters will debut in April. Ooh.
I'm sensing something really biased in this article.
Creepy? Yeah.
Creepy.
And hey, from what I saw, it looked interesting.
I did too.
Publisher Modiphius is joining the celebration with their co-op board game. Interesting.
Looks like Risk.
You've conquered South America. Thunderbird 2
rescue the world.
Thunderbird 2 just burnt Australia. The game will allow all the players to cooperate as they span the globe in their advanced international rescue machines, completing missions on land, sea, and air while foiling the schemes of the nefarious Hood.
Ooh, the Hood.
Thunderbirds is being designed by Matt Leacock, best known for designing an excellent, massive, successful Pandemic. So tabletop co-op fans know there's a good chance this will be a great game. Game night.
Interesting. Yeah, possibly. Yeah. Possibly.
Modiphius is pushing for more expansions for the base game with a Kickstarter that's already obliterated tons of stretch goals. They're a British company, but the backer levels ship worldwide.
Oh, nice.
Hey, good call. We're going to have to find this. While the miniature machines and some other components are still in the concept stage, it's already pretty sharp looking a game. Yeah, it looks like these are sort of rough draft CGI game pieces, but look pretty cool.
Not bad.
Hey, the Kickstarter looks like it's already funded. So if you want to get in on it, I have to convert pounds to dollars to figure out what I'm going to pay.
About 1.65 roughly. Is a fair estimate.
Yeah. 3.14.
That's pie. Sorry. Okay. Google, convert $1 to pounds. Oh,
his phone just kicked in. I heard it.
Hey Siri.
That only works if you're plugged in. Darn it.
Yep, I know.
Shut up, you phone.
We had two iPhones plugged in to AC next to each other, my coworker and mine. And I said, watch this. Hey, Siri, call my wife. And they both started calling to me.
Well, the other night, Ben was doing a podcast with my other
co-host on Fusion Patrol, and my phone
was plugged in, and he said something about Siri.
I didn't even say Siri, "Hey Siri."
My phone started to.
"Hey Siri." It just turned on by itself.
He did say Siri, though.
I did say the word Siri. Yes.
Staying with the creepy theme.
Yeah.
All right, we have one final thing in the Geek Library about Lord of the Rings. And I think everybody knows
I've seen this.
Have you seen this?
The
plot hole, everybody knows. Why didn't they just take the eagles to Mordor in the first place?
No, ask the eagles. You can't just take them.
I checked.
Thank you.
Take the eagles. Just take the eagles. Yeah.
Right.
They charge $25 bucks per checked bag.
It's like taking Delta to Seattle. It's the thing you say. Anyway.
But you got to go through Salt Lake to get there.
Ben, would you like to elaborate on the plot line and how it played out?
Well, Gandalf goes to Saruman, and he's looking for any kind of help after learning that Frodo's ring is indeed the One Ring of Power.
Right.
And they need to come up with a plan for destroying it. Saruman, however, reveals that he's working with Sauron, and he, of course, imprisons Gandalf for not joining him.
I've got a sweet new job, Gandalf.
Yes. Gandalf needs to escape, and he also knows that he has to come up with a plan for destroying the ring by himself. So he thinks to get the eagles to help him escape, and it sparks the ideas that he could have to help get the ring to Mordor. He's not an idiot.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
No. Yes. But one can fly.
Barely.
But he appears when he intends to.
Yes. So when he escapes on the Eagles, he doesn't go directly to Rivendell to meet the hobbits.
Let's stop by the hut now first.
Yeah. He first goes to meet the Eagles where the Eagles live, which we now know from The Hobbit is in the northern parts of the Misty Mountains on the eastern slopes. So Gandalf and the Eagles discuss the plan for the Eagles to take Frodo and the Ring to Mordor, and the Eagles agree to do it. They would have the element of surprise and much greater numbers if they did end up having to fight the Nazgul.
And they charge $50 per bag.
Right. Yes. Well, this plan is the only plan that has any reasonable chance of success. Gandalf and the Eagles agree that the plan should be kept very secret.
Shh.
Because if Sauron hears about it, he realized the one weakness in his defenses and quickly tried to protect himself against it. And there goes the one advantage that his enemies have, and that is surprise!
We'll have to rely on Shelob.
Yeah. So Gandalf can't risk losing this advantage, so he tells no one when he arrives at Rivendell. Nobody can know the plan until they reach the Eagles and are flying on their way to Mordor, because if they're captured, they could have the plan tortured out of them. Frodo Baggins! Just like that. In the same way that Gollum had the location of the ring tortured out of him. So when they leave Rivendell, they're a group of nine. Not just Frodo, Sam, by himself like he planned to. Well, that's fine. There are plenty of Eagles to carry them.
Extra seating capacity.
Yes. Gandalf just has to get the Fellowship to the other side of the Misty Mountains and go north to meet the Eagles where they live, because meeting them anywhere else would mean a greater risk of being seen by the enemy. He can't take any chances of this plan being discovered in any way, and is being extremely careful, because as far as he knows, the survival of Middle-earth rests on the secrecy and success of this plan.
He had no backup.
Right. There are four main routes across the Misty Mountains. The High Pass, Redhorn Pass,
yes.
Moria.
Don't go there.
And the Gap of Rohan.
Very bad weather. Okay.
Being closest to the Eagles, the High Pass would have been ideal for Gandalf's plan, but he decided against it because it was the obvious route for crossing the mountains for whatever plan they might have.
Liar. He wanted miles.
Yeah.
So Saruman was watching it. It was also infested with goblins and orcs, and sounds like a disease, who could see them traveling north after the pass, inform Sauron or Saruman, who might then realize they were going north to meet the Eagles, thus discovering the plan. Are you with me so far on this?
Thought they were going north to Alaska.
No, that's...
Oh, that's the song. Sorry.
That's where they filmed this.
So. Oh, we can't, yeah. We can't take the northernmost of the four passes.
Because it's obvious.
It's too obvious and well-guarded.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the next northern pass is what Gandalf settled for, even though it's a very dangerous pass, and even though it would mean a long journey north to meet the Eagles, it is still the safest route for his plan to remain secret, and that is what's important to him now.
But what's wrong with this?
Well, keeping his plan secret was the main reason for him choosing the Redhorn Pass, but Saruman was watching for that one too and sent storms to stop them. This then led them to the Gap of Rohan, which would then take them too close to Isengard, and more importantly, too far south, which was no good for the plan, as they'd have to travel the whole length of the Misty Mountains up the eastern side to meet the Eagles.
Gotta walk there by now.
Right.
Hey, so he could get their autograph, by the way.
I got nothing.
Ooh, the Eagles?
Like, yeah, the
Eagles. Yeah, the Eagles.
Don Henley. Glenn Frey. Yeah, nice. An expensive pop, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're looking for it.
Okay. So anyway, the gap was not an option for Gandalf, and the only way left was Moria.
And we all know what happened there.
Yes, Mines of Moria, which he didn't like at all, and we see he's very reluctant. We think it's only because of the Balrog, but it's also because of the risk of goblins and orcs seeing them go through the north on the eastern side, much like the High Pass.
Poor little Stevie Balrog. We miss him.
Yeah, I liked it when he was a little Balrog.
He was on his way to school. Don't you guys were here for that when Slice was around?
I wasn't.
No, not that one.
We have to find that. That was one of the best clips. Anyway, keep going.
So anyway, they were afraid to go through Moria. And because it was further south than he planned for, which it meant it would take them longer once again to reach the Eagles. Now, they almost get through Moria, but Gandalf ends up fighting the Balrog and falling down the chasm. When he's about to fall, he realizes he has to tell them the Eagle plan very quickly before he falls, and in a way that any nearby orcs and goblins would not understand.
And of course he says...
Warning! Not that!
No! Spoiler alert!
Warning, Will Robinson.
No, he simply says,
"Fly, you fools."
That's what that is.
Right, right.
Hoping that at least one of the fellowship would understand what he really means.
Nope.
But they don't. He falls and fights the Balrog. Meanwhile, the fellowship escapes the Moria and escapes with their only plan they've known to get the ring to Mordor.
That was unintentional.
Frodo's looking at Gandalf. Frodo's looking at Gandalf falling. Go, the hell's that mean? Fly, you fools! What?
Yeah.
How about some boarding passes, Gandalf?
Anyway,
these seats are above the wings.
It's an interesting theory. Rubbish. Thanks for taking us there, Ben.
Rubbish.
That's an interesting theory.
It's an interesting theory. I don't buy it, but it's.
He had to keep it secret.
Yeah. I'm going to shoot that one down.
Now I'm going to think about it every time I watch the movie.
No.
Well, just like when you're watching Star Wars Episode 4 and you think, well, Obi-Wan killed Uncle Ben and Aunt Beru.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I hate that theory.
Okay.
No. No, I no.
We'll have to get our favorite stormtrooper in here.
By the way, real quick, I did. Speaking of questionable material on the internet, I did download the Hobbit, the Tolkien edit. Have you heard about that one?
No.
Okay, so they took all the three movies the from the Hobbit and they edited them up.
Sliced out all of Peter Jackson's editions.
They made it the story more focused on Bilbo like it is in the book, you know? And so I watched it. It turned it into like a 4-hour movie, but you watch it and you're like, I think it was a little bit better because the pacing was a little bit better because, you know, the second movie was just drug. Second movie wasn't anything but just a tie over to the third. But anyway, the way it flowed, I thought it was much better. And so I thought I'd share that if you ever see it lying around somewhere. Might want to check it out.
Alrighty.
Well, that'll make the Battle of the Five Armies rather dry because Bilbo was barely there. I mean, he was unconscious.
That's right. Yeah.
Never mind this 50 minutes of blackness.
Yeah. There we go. All you hear is swords changing and this all black. He just opens.
Yeah, with occasional little subtitle caption, Bilbo's still unconscious.
like a bad adventure game.
Yeah.
Because, the movie's focused more on the dwarves or on Thorin than it did really Bilbo. So
well, that's
kind of
went
back and forth a little bit. So, but yeah, this changed it around a bit. And I liked it.
All right. We are coming to the end. We have another weekly question for our listeners and we've hinted at this throughout the show. We might even have to retitle this show. We want to know, what was the first thing you pirated? Software, a movie, music on the radio,
I think I just, put mine out there. So
let us know and we will protect your identity. If you choose to share, let us know. But if you want to remain anonymous, just put on one of those funny black and white masks with the mustache. No, never mind.
And the voice distorter.
We have your software.
We have the IP.
Let us know. You can send an email to technorama@chuckchat.com or drop us a voicemail and distort your own voice, 206-222-2428, 206-222-CHAT. We would love to hear from you. And with that, I appreciate you stopping by, Ben and Keith.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Fun as
always.
Always
a pleasure, guys.
Fun as always. Roll that beautiful bean footage. Thank you for listening. And will you be back from time to time? I know Ben wasn't feeling well for a long time.
I was down with a Christmas croup.
Yeah, and it lasted till Easter.
Yeah, exactly.
Now he gets Easter basket?
Yeah, there we go.
A Easter illness.
Rotten egg.
Salmonella.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
Look forward to that.
Bloody Easter bunny.
Hard to boil those things next time.
Exactly.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you. It's always been fun.
Thanks for adding the sound effects. We'll have to get an audio jack over there for you next time.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. God, no.
You can find all this wonderful information for our podcast over at checkchat.com. And thank you, everyone, for joining us on the live stream. We forgot to do the shout out, but we'll get that next time.
Shout out.
Yeah. We'll do the binary high five thing and we'll go home.
101.
That's me disguising my voice.
As an orc?
No, as anonymous.